Welcome to Financial Repression Authority's Roundtable Insight, where the best fund managers, economists, and industry leaders discuss the key investment issues and challenges in the current macroeconomic environment.
Hi, welcome to FRA's Roundtable Insight. This is Richard Benulli. Today we have Alastair McLeod and Bosco Kacharovic. Alastair is head of research for Gold Money and an Austrian economist. He has a background as a stockbroker, banker, and fund manager. Bosco is the president and COO of Kindigo Capital, a Canadian-based private equity firm in Windsor, Ontario, Canada. He holds financial licenses in commodity derivatives, stocks, mutual funds, and private equity. Welcome, gentlemen.
Nice to be here.
Thank you for having me, Richard.
Great. So today, I thought we'd do a focus on physical gold. Why physical gold? Why does it make sense? Where to store it? How to store it? And then perhaps a comparison to what's happening in the cryptocurrency world, sort of gold versus cryptocurrencies debate. And so I thought we'd kick it off with a if you want, Alastair, with why physical gold? Why does it make sense?
Well, the basic sense behind physical gold is that it's nobody else's liability. It is money. It's money, not an investment, and I think that's an important point. But as money, it tends to retain, in fact, over a period of time, it tends to increase its purchasing power, measured against commodities and, if you like, the items that are manufactured out of commodities. And if you want proof of this, basically, from 1969 to the present day, the dollar priced in gold has lost over 97% of its purchasing power. So that's how strong gold is. But if you're going to hold gold in paper form, someone can come away and change the rules. Your paper might go bust if, let's say, you're in ETFs which invest in synthetic gold. If you try and invest in gold on the futures exchanges, sort of rolling contracts, that again is subject to, I mean, if you try and take delivery, you may not get your delivery. The one thing that really matters is that you have the physical gold. Now, obviously, you can't store all your gold at home if you've got any significant level of assets. So you need to find, if you like, a really good LBMA registered vaulting company who will store your gold. And that's basically what we do at Gold Money. We act as custodian. Our customers' gold is not on our balance sheet. It operates under Canadian bailment laws. I think that's the technical term. So if we have some sort of financial accident, there is absolutely no dispute about the ownership of the gold which we have as custodians. It belongs to our customers. We have both a metal audit and also a financial audit every quarter, so that again, you know, it's all recorded, it's all there, it's yours, and you've got a choice of vaults around the world. So if you're an American and you have a fear that the American government might command you to submit your gold in America, it's not under the American government's control. If you put it into a foreign jurisdiction, I mean, you know, like Switzerland or Singapore or somewhere like that, I wouldn't say that you break the rules, but it just makes it a bit more difficult for your government to get the gold. So there are all sorts of ways in which you can ensure that your money capital, if you like, is safe at all times. And that basically is the function of gold stored in a proper vault.
And your thoughts, Bosco?
Yeah, I have to agree with Alastair. We approach gold as a form of currency. We are a regulated securities dealer in Canada in the as an exempt market dealer. So we provide as well storage facilities for investors in physical gold. One of our recent announcements was that we have a platform where RSP investors, retirement accounts, can put physical gold into their retirement accounts and have it stored in the LBMA approved vault, and they can trade the gold, buy and sell it at any time. When the gold is in your RSP account, because it's in trust for the retirement, then the clients can't take delivery of it, but the physical gold is there. It's accountable. It's audited. And we offer basically a non-fungible system. So when our clients purchase their gold, it's in a specific container. It's allocated and segregated to their account. So the exact same gold maples or gold bars that someone purchases is the exact same that they're going to be selling. So we try and explain to people that, you know, a properly diversified portfolio should have some physical gold and silver in it, depending on suitability. You know, you might have 10% or 20%, but it all depends on the rest of the portfolio that the client is holding. And at Kindigo, we focus on our clients are mostly accredited investors, so there's considerable due diligence that we do, and KYC forms that have to be filled out according to the compliance requirements in Canada.
And Alistair, what are the risks for storing gold or ways in which you can have it from your perspective in terms of the industry? Like what are the advantages and disadvantages of different ways of storing gold?
Well, obviously, I think we've just agreed the best way to store it. I mean, you know, unless you're talking about small change at home, if I can describe it that way, is in an LBMA registered vault. And again, if you have it in a different jurisdiction from the one in which you live, that, if you like, is another safeguard. The other safeguard that a proper LBMA registered vault gives you is that gold that goes into the vault basically is proper bullion. We ensure that anything that comes in for our customers is bullion and not tungsten painted gold color, if you like, or that unfortunate experience that happened in Canada earlier this week. So that's terribly important. So you've got to ensure that you know, the gold comes from a proper refiner, and also it's not conflict gold. This is another thing which is becoming an increasing issue in our politically correct world. So I would, when it comes to dealing with certain centres, such as some of the refiners in Dubai, I sometimes wonder what the source of their gold is. So it is important, I think, to deal with reputable people. Storing gold at home does give you potential problems, because if you're careless and you let someone know that you might have some gold at home, then you're probably open to being robbed. And if it's a lot of gold, then you know, and the story gets out, then you could actually be robbed by some very, very nasty people. So I think it is what I would keep at home is probably fairly limited. I would actually look at having a proper vaulted gold. Physical ETFs, I think, are okay, but you've got to understand that you don't have possession of the gold. You have possession of a piece of paper, which gives you an entitlement to some gold. And you may not even have a direct entitlement to some gold, because when it comes to submitting your ETF shares or stock in return for gold, usually it can only be done through authorized banks who are on the list to be able to do it. So that again is a bit of a problem.
And your thoughts, Bosco?
You know, our system is a closed loop system, so any We eliminate any possibility of any counterfeit gold products entering our platform because it's all done through our office. I inspect every product that goes into the vault for my clients, and we are providers through the Canadian Mint to other gold refiners. We have direct relationships with them, so there's no there's no gold that gets out into the public. And the article that Alistair mentioned regarding the Canadian Mint and RBC, you know, it seems there was a case, I think a few years ago, that they found a gold bar, a counterfeit bar at a jeweler. And always seems that it's a jeweler or a pawn shop that these things are discovered at. You know, I haven't experienced any counterfeit products coming through our business. I don't think anyone who wants to pawn off any counterfeit products would go through our business or Alistair's business. I'm sure that these people that are attempting this are staying away from reputable dealers because they'd be caught right away. But the Canadian Mint has issued a statement to their defense. I mean, I guess and we're a approved bullion DNA dealer with the Canadian Mint. So they said that the gold product wasn't even produced by the Canadian Mint, and the Royal Bank is saying that they didn't even sell that product. So how this came into being, I don't know. But I think people need to understand too that, you know, the ownership contract that you own the gold, and you know, people have to do their due diligence and their background checks on who they're dealing with. Because you, at the end of the day, when you want to sell, you have to make sure that, you know, the gold is available for you that you're selling. So when it's in our vault, you have title ownership of the gold. And even the clients that are keeping their gold at home, you know, we don't pay out to people when they come into our office right away. We have the gold inspected, and we always, just to cover ourselves, we tell them they have to wait 24 hours before they receive their funds. So anyone trying to pawn off a fake gold bar isn't going to leave our office and let us inspect it for 24 hours. So we've never come across anything like that. And I think this is an isolated incident, but I think people need to be aware of it's the ownership contract. When you're storing your gold in a vault, the title ownership of your gold is what the important thing is.
Can I, Richard, just add to Bosco is saying there? One advantage that you get of having your gold in a proper LBMA vault is that it should be properly insured, and we automatically insure all our customers' gold. So I think that's a very important point. Another important point to realize is that if you take delivery of your gold and you want to sell it, you have to effectively make sure that, you know, convince the buyer that it is authentic, and that will involve it being tested. So the marketability of gold which leaves the vaults is not nearly as good as gold that is kept in the vaults. I just wanted to add those two points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. That's very important, the insurance aspect too. We have clients that are storing, some people even store a large quantity of gold and silver at their homes, and it's just, it's too risky. And then what eventually happens is when they want to sell it, you know, in the case of silver, people are holding a few thousand ounces of silver. It gets pretty heavy, and it's cumbersome moving it, you know. And when it's in the vault, for us, it's very easy to identify. Each container has a specific number. I have clients, you know, across the country and in Europe that they just pick up the phone, they call us, sell the specific holdings and wire them the funds. So that's, people are unable to do that when you have your gold at home and you're traveling or you want to liquidate it quickly. Because one of the other issues that comes about is when people call and they want to sell it, if the market's moving fast or very volatile, I won't lock in a price for a client unless the gold is in our office. You can't call me. But if the gold is in the vault, I know it's there. I know the identity of it. So I can lock in a price for a client over the telephone and send them the money. But if they have it in their basement and they want to lock in the price, you know, it's not possible. They have to bring it in person. And once it's in my possession, then we can discuss locking in the price.
Hmm. Now, in this day and age, with the advent of cryptocurrencies, does physical gold still make sense? So if we look at what's happening with Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, is there a migration of investors holding physical gold towards holding cryptocurrencies either together or as an alternative? Alistair?
What a fascinating question. I think, Richard, the answer to your question, whether there's a migration from buying gold into buying cryptocurrencies, I think there must be, yes. We can't deny that. The reason I would say that is because so many people who deal in anything really don't actually understand the underlying economics of what they're doing. What they understand, I think, are trends. And quite simply, if you see a trend moving and you're a speculator, you just jump on the trend. So you are going to have people who will take the view that gold is less exciting than cryptocurrencies, has potentially less return over whatever time frame that they're putting in their mind, and so they will sell gold and buy cryptocurrencies. Of that, I have absolutely no doubt whatsoever. What is interesting in this, however, and I did actually write a piece on this back in, I think, dated August the 10th. So for anyone who's interested, if you go on to the Gold Money site and go into research and go into the insights, then you will find August the 10th, I wrote Cryptocurrency, Its Status of Money. Now, this is very important because I won't go through the article, but basically my conclusion is that cryptocurrencies are not money. It's not just a question of volatility, it's the origins of it and all the rest of it. But cryptocurrencies are the media for speculation par excellence. With the limited supply and all the rest of it. And the fact is that so far the people who've got into it are basically geeks, if you like, if I can be that rude to call them that. The hedge funds are beginning to wake up to this. The authorities are beginning to wake up to it. I mean, even was it yesterday, the CME decided that they're going to introduce a Bitcoin future. Various governments have sort of taken on the technology. Some have been frightened away by the volatility in the things and have told, I think the Chinese have sort of tried to close down Chinese-based operators. Basically, the public has yet to buy it. And if you look at any bubble, which is essentially what the cryptocurrencies are, it's only when the public are really into it that you can say, this is time to get out. It is getting dangerous. It is going to collapse. We are some way from that. But what I can't see is what's going to stop these cryptocurrencies rising in the meantime, because if it's becoming legitimized through futures exchanges and so on and so forth, you are going to get a lot of hedge fund type money, speculative institutional money, if you like, yet to buy these things. So I see them going considerably higher than this. I mean, you know, please don't hold me to it, but that, if you like, is the theory, if you like, of the madness of crowds, as Charles Mackay wrote back in the 19th century. We are seeing it, and this is pure. It's like tulips without the bulbs. I mean, it is amazing. I get very unpopular for saying this, by the way, because everybody in cryptocurrencies are convinced it's money, convinced it's some sort of new paradigm. But it was ever thus. Every bubble is like that. Everybody involved believes that this is a new future and whatever. What fascinates me, we've looked at it so far in terms of crypto versus gold, which was the basis of your question. But I think at some stage it's going to move on from there. And what we're going to be looking at is the potential for cryptocurrencies to destabilize paper currencies. I'm trying to get this one, trying to get my head around this one at the moment, and I'm planning to write an article on this one shortly. So this to me is a fascinating topic. It really is.
Could the momentum into cryptocurrencies keep a lid or a cap on the price of gold in U.S. dollar terms, Alistair, as a follow-up question?
No, I don't think so. There is actually a far bigger story going on in gold, and it's all to do with the declining use of the dollar in international trade, and this is something that's being forced on to the rest of the world outside America by China and Russia working together as head of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. I think that we're likely to see, my information is that we're going to get an oil contract settled in yuan on the Shanghai Futures Exchange by the end of this month, November. Between yuan contracts, countries like Iran, who either are forbidden to deal in dollars or out of their own choice would not want to go anywhere near a dollar, will have the facility to buy gold in yuan. And that, I think, is something that is likely to lead to a significant rise in the price of gold. The other thing about the price of gold is that there are an awful lot of dollars outside America. We've got some people running around saying, well, the American economy is rubbish and all the rest of it, and it's going to collapse, and then, the purchasing power of the dollar will go up. But the latest figures we have, which are over a year old now, is that the total portfolios and cash, dollar cash outside America, is in excess of $17 trillion. That was midway through last year, 2016. It was barely changed from the level midway 2015. My guess is that with the dollar having eased over the course of this year, we will already be recording a decline in the total value of foreign portfolios, the dollar element in foreign portfolios. Those figures will be released in next April or May, so we won't know until then. But just imagine if you've got $17 trillion outside America and you have got an economy, you're what, about 19 trillion dollars GDP, something like that. This is too much money outside, I think, for the situation to be sustained. So I would see the dollar going weak. And that is what's going to drive gold up. And I think it is something which is independent of the cryptocurrency story. But what just does fascinate me is the potential for the cryptocurrencies to destabilize paper currencies, if you like, as well. And as I said, that I've got to get my head around that before I write it.
And your thoughts, Bosco?
Yeah, Alistair and I seem to be in the same camp. I've had actually a number of my clients who've actually sold their precious metals to purchase bitcoins because it seems like an alternative currency. But it's not officially in a currency, but it seems to be operating like one. And, judging from what's happening, the attraction to Bitcoin is similar to the attraction to gold. It's a alternative currency outside the banking system and government and so on. But the problem with that is when you're comparing it to gold, gold is still a physical commodity. You can take possession of it. I have a problem with Bitcoin because it exists on the internet. It's not doesn't exist in the real world. You can't take physical possession like gold or even paper currencies. So there's a huge cyber threat to the Bitcoin. I find it strange that the person who invented Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto, is still anonymous. Nobody knows who he is or where he came from or whatever. That kind of raises a lot of flags for me. When you have issues with Bitcoin or let's say that there's a hacker that hacks into Bitcoin, who are you going to call? There's nobody you can sue. There's when you invest in a company or you buy gold and silver or invest in a stock, there's people behind that. When you invest in currencies, there's the currency broker, the government that's issuing the currency. There's essentially nobody behind Bitcoin. It's operating and it exists on the internet. And apparently, from what I understand, it's a series of encrypted keys or what have you. But I think one of the fundamental changes that Bitcoin is introducing is the blockchain technology that it's produced on, which I think that there's a lot of people in the financial institutions are adopting this new form of a distributed ledger. And even that's questionable as to the advantages of that. I think the credit card companies and the banking system, the technology that's behind that, their ledger entries and their software accounting systems are doing fairly well. Introducing a distributed ledger, I'm not sure what the advantages of that are, but it seems that a lot of people are attracted to it. And, you know, mind you, people are always attracted to new things. Like Alistair alluded to earlier, but you have to remember that when the internet was introduced and people were adopting, there was a lot of it. Along with the advantages, it brought in a lot of problems. We have high frequency trading now, so it's not always a great thing to not have a central authority. In some cases, you want to have a central authority to be the mediator between two parties. So I'm still skeptical about Bitcoin. Obviously, it's doing very well on a price level, but on a value level, I still have a lot of reservations about investing in it. But apparently, the CME group thinks that a futures contract would be in demand, and people will have the opportunity to hedge the risk in Bitcoin. So. For me, it's too early to get in. I'd like to see how it develops.
Mm-hmm. And I saw today an article by Jim Rickards on a new research report out by Goldman Sachs discussing this very issue, gold versus cryptocurrencies. Goldman Sachs appears to be leaning on the side of gold still as a preservation of purchasing power. They mention that cryptocurrencies are vulnerable to hacking, government regulation, and infrastructure failure during a crisis. So those issues of concern. And because of the volatility in cryptocurrencies, they still see gold as preserving purchasing power better than cryptocurrency. So those are the results of the research report by Goldman Sachs. And any thoughts on that? And your final thoughts, Alistair?
Well, I go along with what Goldman Sachs have concluded. I haven't read their report, I must say, but as you've described it, it's hard to disagree with it. But I don't, I know that for people sort of trading in it, this is all sort of a big issue. But from an economics point of view, there is no doubt about it. Gold is money, always has been money, whereas cryptocurrencies are not. They're merely a medium for speculation. We don't actually care about that, perhaps. We all we see is Bitcoin going up, and we've got to get in there, or Ethereum or whatever. We've got to go and buy it, you know, because you can't stand aside and not buy these things. So, and this is why I think it's terribly important to understand that actually it is just a whole load of hot air and nothing else. But this balloon, I think, if I'm reading markets correctly, is in the early stages rather than the final stages of its inflation. And as I said, I mean, so far the people who've got into it are the people in the know, if you like, the people who have been following this story from the outset, the early adopters. The institutions are yet to get in. And I think that, I mean, this is the thing about the CME contract. It doesn't settle in Bitcoin at all. All it does is it uses the Bitcoin as a reference price. So that's actually not going to be anything like a gold futures contract where the gold is actually deliverable. Mm-hmm. This is a very, very different thing. So I can't see really that there is going to be the arbitrage between the futures contract and Bitcoin. I can't see how that's going to happen because there's nothing deliverable. So that is not going to take demand out of the Bitcoin story so much, I don't think, as inflating the number of gold contracts in outstanding on COMEX definitely takes demand out of the gold market. So to my way of thinking, the institutions have yet to get into this. They will get into it because these new instruments like, you know, COMEX contracts and so on and so forth are beginning to take place. I think the other thing that's going to happen is that the regulators are going to come in and insist that anyone maintaining accounts for people in bitcoins or other cryptocurrencies are going to have to do their due diligence. And I think the industry as a whole itself is likely to turn around and think we've got to clean up our act to make ourselves mainstream. I think all that is still ahead of us. And then, you know, when you think about the public investing in this, investing is the wrong word, speculating is probably the better word, that they think they're investing. This is not just a bubble, let's say, in the Shanghai stock market, or, you know, if we go back to the tulips in Amsterdam, and that's what, 1640s or whatever it was, or the Mississippi bubble, which was France, or the South Sea bubble, which was England, and more particularly not just England, you know, I mean, just sort of England within coaching distance of London. I mean, that was the source of this. We're talking about something that is catching the imagination globally. I mean, already we've got so many imitators. I think there are over 1,000 cryptocurrencies I read somewhere, whereas proper paper currencies are something like 170 only. So already we're out, you know, there are a lot of there's a lot of funny deals being done round and these ICOs and all the rest of it. This is an act which, if it gets cleaned up, and they will try and clean it up, I'm sure that they'll try and clean it up. The authorities will want to see it cleaned up because they want to tax it apart from anything else. And the other thing is, I think that the industry itself will want to see it cleaned up, and that will open the gates for everybody to get involved. This is a theoretical bubble for any student of psychology in the future. They're going to look back on this as an absolute wonderful example of a pure speculative bubble, which was totally out of thin air.
And your final thoughts, Bosco?
Yeah, when you compare the standard deviation of gold versus Bitcoin. I read a report recently that over the past 12 months, gold has had a 12% deviation, where Bitcoin is over 60%. So, you know, I agree that it is a speculative instrument. It's going to be quite volatile. And the attraction of many people to Bitcoin to elude the financial markets, I think that's going to be taken care of with the regulators are going to get involved. Obviously, the CME now is adopting it. So, this idea of people being able to have a peer-to-peer and to trade outside of regulation or the government's eyes, I think that's just an illusion, because you have to settle these bitcoins for currency that's going to be used in the real world. And you know, you have to receive it in a bank. It has to be wired from whatever Bitcoin exchange, or so there's going to be financial institutions involved regulating it. So, I mean, is it going to go up further? It's very possible. I think it is in the early stages. You know, it's going to go through the process like anything else that's brand new. It's going to weed out all the weak currencies, and will Bitcoin be the winner in the end? I don't know. Maybe Ethereum or the other 1,000 that are available. Who knows how it's going to turn out? But there is definitely an attraction to it, and it seems to be distracting. Some gold investors are distracted and selling their gold and silver for Bitcoin, and I disagree with it, but you know, people like to follow trends, and in some cases, they're going to have to experience the negative part of following a trend and being wrong. So I don't really know what's going to happen, but it's interesting. It's a new technology, and we'll have to see.
Okay, great. Great insight, gentlemen. How can our listeners learn more about your work, Alistair?
Well, the easiest way is to open an account at Gold Money. But no, Gold Money site, I write weekly. It's published on Thursdays usually. So if you go onto the site, goldmoney.com, research, and then insights, you'll find that. And I also write a weekly market report, and that again can be found under the research column there.
And Bosco?
Yeah, people can reach me at our website. It's kindigo.com, KINDIGO.com. And, you know, on there, there's information about our company, my background, and they can email us through there. We don't do a column, but we do keep in touch with our clients and keep them up to date on what's happening in the gold market.
Great. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your insight. Thanks for being on the program show.
The FRA Roundtable Insight Show is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the show each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Any discussions among the panel participants or responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the panel participants and do not take into consideration the listener's suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Please be advised that you invest or speculate at your own risk.